today, and as I talking to Dave, some of these proverbs are very straightforward, and some of them are enigmatic. And in the original Hebrew, they would make more sense if we all were in Israel and spoke Hebrew, which we aren't. So let's go ahead on chapter 19. Our Father, thank you so much for another time together. We need you. I think all three of us are exhausted and tired, and it's a big effort for my brothers to even get here. And life is certainly plenty hectic, circumstantially, and there's a war on. Anyway, please meet us here, and please renew our spirits and our hearts as we look through the Proverbs of Solomon today, chapter 19. Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than one who is perverse in his lips and is a fool. That's pretty obvious. We respect a man who may not have any money or anything going for him, but nevertheless who's trustworthy and honest and dependable. That we value that. We tend to not value a person who is perverse or crooked or deceitful or untrustworthy. Particularly in the matter of his speeches. He promises things and never delivers, or he makes statements that are not right. So this guy is a fool. Fool in the book of Proverbs doesn't mean the same as we use the word fool quite. It's the opposite of somebody who's wise. Also, it is not good for a soul to be without knowledge, and he sins who hastens with his feet. Well, that's interesting. If you're a dumb idiot and you don't bother to learn and you never read and you never listen, then you have no knowledge and you're empty. So that's what this proverb is saying. And then the second part is, he sins who hastens with his feet. A person who hastens with his feet is a man who is impulsive, who leaps into action before he's heard the whole story, and so he's impetuous and impulsive. So that's what that verse is about. The foolishness of a man twists his way. His heart frets against the Lord. That is somebody who won't listen to reason, who behaves in what is reckless or foolish, is actually finding that God is not his friend, but his adversary. Wealth makes many friends, but the poor is separated from his friend. Now, that's kind of tongue-in-cheek, because if you have a lot of money and you spend it pretty freely, you'll have no end of freeloaders visiting you and taking advantage of you, and you'll think that you're very popular, because you're a really nice guy, and it's actually your generosity that's attracted the crowd, like flies to honey. The poor man is separated from his friend. If you haven't got anything, and you're dead broke, and you're down, and you're depressed, even your best friend may not have time to hang out with you. That makes sense. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who speaks lies will not escape. It's a very serious matter to tear down the character of another human being by lying about them, by misrepresenting them, by gossiping about them. That's what a false witness is. A false witness is not somebody who goes into court and lies about you. It's somebody that's behind your back tearing you down. And God's going to get that person eventually. He who speaks lies will not escape. You're not going to get away with being being a liar and being deceitful in the long term. Short term, you get away with it. Not in the long term. Many entreat the favor of the nobility every man is a friend to one who gives gifts. You can always appeal to a higher authority. You can always go to somebody that's got money or power and ask them for a favor or ask them for something. If you know somebody that is extra generous, it's pretty easy to take advantage of that man's generosity, not pay it back, use him, take advantage of his generous nature, and he won't even pay attention to it. All the brothers of the poor hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? This is the poor, selfish guy who's on a pity party, who's gets everybody, drags everybody down all the time. And people that are savvy don't hang out with that guy. He's bad news. Even his friends won't have anything to do with him. He's a leper. Well, that's talking about somebody that's indiscriminate and ended up broke. He may pursue them with words, yet they abandon him. So you might have a real creepy friend who hounds you, who bugs you, who's always clinging to you and always dependent on you, and how annoying that is, and how quickly people will shun such a person. So he ends up with no friends and he doesn't even know why. He who gets wisdom loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will find good. That's self-evident. To grow into be a wise, dependable person is in your own best interest. It's in your own best interest to make distinctions between good and evil. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who speaks lies shall perish. That's long term. God's watching over everybody's lives, and nobody gets away with nothing in the long run. Luxury is not fitting for a fool, much less for a servant to rule over princes. We've all met people that are wallowing in money or wealth or power, and yet they're total losers as people. And so it's inappropriate for a foolish, careless, creepy guy to have a lot of power and a lot of money and a lot of influence. It's just, those are incongruous. And it's also incongruous for a servant to rule over princes. That would mean an uneducated, dumb, stupid servant who is, for some reason, in authority over the prince, who's well-educated and well-informed. That's upside down. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger. It is to his glory to overlook a transgression. That's an interesting proverb. To be discreet, to be careful, to be thoughtful. When you're in a position of power, or you have authority over somebody else who's weaker and more helpless, it's a good idea to exercise patience, and it's a good idea to forgive a whole bunch of minor infractions, and to not be bugged by the faults in the other person that are maybe pretty obvious. The king's wrath is like the roaring of a lion. His favor is like dew on the grass. You do not want to get a person in authority mad at you. A judge, a policeman, an authority figure, a pastor. You don't want to get on the bad side of somebody who's pressed and busy and maybe short-fused. If you do, he might throw you in jail. He might take your life. He might turn his back on you for a promotion. So just common sense that you should cultivate good friendships with everybody and be careful about somebody who has real power over you, might act unfavorably. His favor is like the dew of the grass. On the other hand, if you are around somebody who's got power or authority, and you're on the good side of that man, like a governor or a mayor or somebody, and you help out, and you are seen as a positive influence in that man's life, then he's likely to do you favors all the time, or go out of his way to help you. So that's pretty obvious. A foolish son is the ruin of his father. The contentions of a wife are a continual dripping. These are humorous. Ordinarily, if a father has tried hard to raise his son right, and his son turns out to be an absolute fool, an idiot, drunkard, a con artist, whatever, that's always reflects on the father. Now, this is, we assume the father here has done his best, and the son has not benefited. So that's what this problem, a foolish son. Now, the second part of verse 13, the contentions of a wife are a continual dripping. This is humorous. If you've ever had a dripping faucet in your house, and you can't go to sleep and you hear the drip, drip, drip of the water over the shower, it can drive you crazy. So also if you have a nagging wife or a nagging mom who belittles you and tears you down and won't ever say anything affirming to you, that sets us on edge. And that's very, very unpleasant to be around. And that's what he says here. The contentions, arguments, bitches, complaints of a wife or a mom are like the dripping of a faucet. Terribly annoying. Well, houses and riches are an inheritance from fathers. A prudent wife is from the Lord. You'll be lucky if your dad passes you some inheritance when he dies and leaves you a legacy and takes care of you. That's not something you can count on. It may happen, it might not. However, if you happen to marry the right woman and she is a blessing to you continually and edifies you and builds you up, then it's God that does that for us. It's God is kind and loving. Verse 15, slothfulness casts one into a deep sleep. An idle person will suffer hunger. If you're going to be a lazy bum and sit around on your rear end and not do anything, you're going to turn into a real miserable person, hard to get along with, hard to relate to, hard to motivate. And that's the slothful. If you know about sloths, the three-toed sloths that live in jungle areas, they're the slowest creatures under the sun. It takes them hours to climb a tree. They're very slow. You know, even think they're dead when they're actually just pausing between one step and another. That's a sloth. An idle person will suffer hunger. If you're not going to work, you can't eat. You'll just go hungry if you don't scrounge and get off your butt and get moving. That's why it's getting a job is such a big deal. It's in the New Testament in very strong language. He who keeps the commandment keeps his soul. He who is careless of his ways will die. It's about lifestyles. It's about being careless, irresponsible, not showing up on time, cheating on your income tax, taking advantage of other people. That's what it's all about. He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and the Lord will pay back what he has given. That's pretty incredible. I remember when we went to India, there were poor beggars all over the place all the day long, and Ted Wise and I learned that it's not a good idea to just go take a bunch of rupees first thing in the morning and put them in your pocket so you can give away to every beggar you met, because only a few beggars are really going to benefit from your generosity. And there's a lot of beggars that are con artists. They're making a big fat income supporting a family by begging. And Ted and I used to pray every day that God would guide us to the beggars that were real and genuine that we could give some few rupees to, 20, 30, 50 cents. And then there were all the rest of them that we just had to ignore. Not easy to ignore people that are obviously hungry and poorly dressed and begging for mercy, little kids and girls and so on. But if you're kind to the poor, the Lord will pay you back. That's pretty awesome. Chasten your son while there's hope. Don't set your heart on his destruction. Correct your son when you see him going off in the wrong direction. Stop him from self-destructing. A lot of kids are relatively innocent and they don't know about the dangers in the world, and they need a dad or somebody, an older brother, that cautions them, that keeps them from destruction and gets them turned in the right direction in life. So that's what this is about. The word chasten sounds a little hard. Correct, encourage, help your son, your younger brothers. A man of great wrath will suffer punishment. If you deliver him, you'll have to do it again. If you get a man that's bad tempered, that blows his cool, that yells and without bursts of anger, and this is habitual, and it's lifelong, he just has a short fuse. That person, if you deliver him from a bad situation where he's been trapped, it's going to go on, and you're going to have to do that over and over again because he won't change his basic life. That's a man of great wrath. So he's very angry at the world. He hates his parents. He hates God. He hates everybody. He hates the woman that he was married to who's now left, so on. Listen to counsel and receive instruction, that you may be wise in your latter days. Boy, that's good advice. In other words, there's a long learning curve before you get to be an older man. But when you're old, hopefully you will have learned something, and your stability and your integrity will reflect that, hopefully. There are many plans in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the Lord's counsel, that will stand. We saw a similar proverb last week about that. You can make plans and set an agenda and have an elaborate bunch of things on your to-do list, and that's all not going to come to any useful conclusion unless the Lord is in it. If the Lord's in it, you'll be fine. But an awful lot of things we do are spur of the moment or poorly advised or impulsive because we think that's going to fix the situation, and it won't. What is desired in a man is kindness. A poor man is better than a liar. How wonderful it is when we meet another human being who's actually kind, who actually cares, who takes an interest in what we're doing in our hurts and pains. And what a balm from Gilead it is, what a fragrance it is when somebody is just plain kind to you. And it's a good idea to have friends that are poor, don't have much going for them, than hanging out with people that are lying and deceitful and untrustworthy, obviously. The fear of the Lord leads to life, and he who has it will abide in satisfaction. He will not be visited with evil. That's guaranteed. God protects us. He keeps us from harm's way, no matter how bad the world is going to pot. So we have an assurance here of God's umbrella over our lives to protect us, to make sure that we can enjoy life. A slothful, lazy man buries his hand in the bowl and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. Here's a man that, now you're eating from a stew or something and you don't have silverware, you're eating with your hand, and this guy puts his hand down into the stew, but he's just too damn lazy to even raise one handful of food up to his mouth, or one spoonful of food. This is really sad. The guy's hungry, he should eat, and instead he falls asleep at the dining room table. And the food gets cold and goes to waste. That's the imagery here. Strike a scoffer, and the simple will become wary. Reprove one who has understanding, and he will discern knowledge. If you're dealing with a skeptic, and he sees you correcting somebody, he's probably going to take note of that, and if he mends his ways without you having to get involved, so much the better. So the way we deal with other people, everyone around picks it up, and they ought to learn from it. So all the more reason that we should be loving and kind. If you correct someone who basically knows the Lord and basically is teachable, and you're saying things carefully, the person that you're correcting will get it. He'll see that you want the best for him, that you're not vindictive, that you're not judgmental. He who mistreats his father and chases away his mother, a son who causes shame, is a son who causes shame and brings reproach. That's the commandment, honor your father and your mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you, that you may live long on the earth. Just the basic respect for the time and money and energy and years that your parents have spent bringing you into the world. Even bad parents spend a lot of time and money to do what they think is right for their kids. Cease listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. My son, adolescent, teenager or something, hey, keep your nose in the Bible. Keep hanging out with good people. Keep learning. If you take a holiday from studying, you're going to gradually go downhill. That's pretty obvious. We have to work at our relationship with Jesus and then work at knowing the Bible, knowing him. A disreputable witness scorns justice. The mouth of the wicked devours iniquity. Well, those are pretty obvious. They're complicated. Judgments are prepared for scoffers, skeptics, beatings for the back of souls. If somebody won't shape up and God has to discipline them severely, well, that's what it took to get their attention. So you don't have to be concerned. If you listen to God when he speaks gently to you, he won't have to discipline you. That's the idea. And the same way we are when we have people in our lives who actually respond to love and correction and benefit and grow and learn, we don't have to hardly worry about them at all. Wine is a mocker. Intoxicating drink arouses brawling. Whoever is led astray by wine is not wise. Well, that's pretty obvious about being a boozer and a drunkard and an alcoholic and the subtle things that happen. The wrath of a king is like the roaring of a lion. We just saw that a minute ago. Whoever provokes him to anger sins against his own life. Don't provoke the sheriff or the governor or your next door neighbor. Don't get them so angry with you that they want to get even. So you're only getting yourself in deeper than you need to be. You don't need to bring this down on yourself. It's honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel. there's no point in starting an argument or wanting to prove to the other person that he's wrong and you're right. That's all counterprotective, and that happens so often in our culture. Is you see what looks like a fault in somebody and you want to correct it. You see somebody not behaving and you let them rush in and fix it and put this guy in the right direction. Well, that's not the way to handle disputes. A sluggard will not plow because of winter, therefore he will beg during the harvest and have nothing. Sluggard is the lazy man that has slept all through the planting season and wouldn't get a job, and now it's winter time, and he says, oh, I can't, there's snow on the ground, I can't go plow the field. Well, you can't have the grain if you don't plow the field, and you waited, you should have plowed the field before the snow came. Counsel in the heart of a man is like deep water. A man of understanding will draw it out. So this is a good thing. If somebody wants to know what makes you tick, what's your secret in life, why you do what you do, then that other person is seeing deep things in you. And it's very good if he can learn from you. Let me come over to your house because I need your advice. That's good. You've had a lot of experience with growing roses. I want to grow some roses. Can you coach me a little? Well, yes. I want to run a house for homeless men. Can you help me, Howard? Well, of course he can. He's had a lot of experience with that. So that's the idea here. Most men will proclaim each his own goodness. Who can find a faithful man? It's so easy to say that you think you're doing right, that you're a good person, that you never make any mistakes, be holier than thou. And most other people will see right through that. Oh, I wish I could find somebody I could trust. The righteous man walks in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. A king who sits on the throne of judgment scatters all evil with his eyes. This is a good king, like Solomon, who's ruling over the people, and he wants to make the right choices and the right decisions in the best interest of the kingdom. And he's, by his very presence, going to cause evil to flee from his people because he's kind and benevolent. That's what Jesus does. He sort of dispels all the darkness and creates an atmosphere that's redemptive and healing. Who can say, I've made my heart clean, I'm pure from my sin? Who can say that he's really come clean? Who can say that his motives are correct? Who can say that he's not lying or deceiving himself and deceiving others or acting from the right motive? Who can say? He never can say that. The best thing is to deal with whatever things in your life that are out of order to deal as best you can. But you're never going to say, well, I'm really innocent all the way. Diverse weights and diverse measures, they're both alike an abomination to the Lord. Diverse weights and measures would be cheating when you sell something at the market, or overcharging, or lying about the cost of something and marking it up unreasonably. That would be diverse weights and measures. Even a child is known by his deeds, by whether what he does is pure and right. If you see children at play, children dealing with each other, you can usually tell right away if they're good or selfish or lying. Children are transparent enough that if you watch them playing and watch them dealing with each other, it's soon pretty clear, because they can fight and yell and get mad at each other, or they can be healing and helpful. And it's kind of obvious in children. the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made both of them. So you have eyes to see, and with your eyes you can sort out a lot of things in the world that are good or a lot of things that are not good. The same way with your ears. What you hear can be bad or lewd or derogatory. So we have to watch both the eye gate and the ear gate, because they're both avenues for good things. Beautiful music comes in through the ears. We see beautiful things with our eyes. But these are also avenues by which lust and selfishness can come in. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made both of them. Do not love sleep, lest you come to poverty. Open your eyes, you'll be satisfied with bread. It is good for nothing, cries the buyer, but when he has gone his way, he boasts. This is the buyer who's misrepresenting his product, and he knows it. So he's, and he is demeaning what he wants to sell you to, so that you'll think you're getting a good bargain when you're not. There is gold and a multitude of rubies. There is such a thing as gold and a multitude of rubies, but the lips of knowledge are a precious jewel. Have knowledge about God, and to share it is far better than having a lot of money in your pocket or a lot of wealth. Take the garment of one who is surety for a stranger and hold it as a pledge with it when it is for a seductress. In the ancient world, if a man gave you his overcoat or his garment, he was trusting you to hold it until he could buy it back or repay you. It was taken as surety. You have his garment, and it's a guarantee that he's going to pay you back what he owes you. Otherwise, you keep his garment, his outer coat. Oftentimes, that's all a man would have in the ancient world, was an outer garment and then his everyday clothes underneath, like an overcoat. And the overcoat was valuable, and you wouldn't take the man's clothes or he'd be naked, but you might say, well, I'll keep your overcoat until you pay me back. That's the idea. I'm holding it as a pledge. Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man. Afterward, his mouth will be filled with gravel. So you have conned somebody out of something deceitfully, and you think that you've got something good, namely bread. So you're going to eat the bread and think that you've got a great victory, and it's going to turn into gravel. Like you're eating gravel. So it's built into the very nature of things. Every purpose is established by counsel. By wise counsel, wage war. Don't rush into something risky until you have prayed about it and gotten advice and thought it through and slept on it. That way you'll make good decisions and you'll stay out of trouble. Because God is ready to establish wise people and let them be successful in life by wise counsel. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his tongue or gossips. Sometimes it's very easy to say extra nice things about somebody to gain their favor. They may be fooled. Oftentimes they're not. Oftentimes they know that you are using them and saying extra nice things about them to get them to treat you favorably, when you may know they're not really nice people after all. So flattering is what it is. He who goes about as a talebearer, gossip, reveals secrets, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips either. Whoever curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in deep darkness. It's a good thing when you can think about the good and bad that your parents gave you, and remember those things, and overlook all the harm they caused you or all their failures, because they could have done differently. So this is, again, to show some basic respect, because God sent you into the world with a mom and a dad, and he knew they were not the best, and he wants the best for you. An inheritance gained hastily at the beginning will not be blessed at the end. Sometimes people are very anxious to get ahead in life, and they're opportunists. They seize upon any opportunity to advance their careers or to get more money or to get more power and influence, and that's hasty. That's presumptuous, and is likely to fail. Do not say, "I will recompense evil." Wait for the Lord, and he will save you. Don't try to pay back the other guy who's hurt you or offended you. No pay. Leave that to God. I have a friend in Turkey who's a Christian, and he is vindictive and resentful and wants to get even. And he's had some rough things in his life. Well, I reminded him of this the other day, and lo and behold, he actually listened. Diverse weights are an abomination to the Lord. A false balance is not good. A man's steps are of the Lord. How then can a man understand his own way? If God is guiding you, oftentimes we can't analyze how God works, because he works silently and powerfully and invisibly, and all we can do is enjoy his wise lead. It's very exciting to see that God's blessing you in spite of yourself. You've made plans, and God blesses you anyway and gives you more than you ever dreamed of. But God's unpredictable in that regard. A man's steps are from the Lord. How then can a man understand his own way? It is a snare for a man to devote rashly something as holy and afterward to reconsider his vows. If something is very, very important to you, don't give up that sense of value and cheapen something that's very precious. That's the idea. The spirit of a man is the lamp of the Lord. Searches all the heart, the depths of his heart. The Holy Spirit is able to search our hearts and see our motives and bring up hidden evil and show us things about ourselves that we never even imagined. We're all built in because we're fearfully and wonderfully made. Mercy and trust preserve the king, and by loving kindness, he upholds his throne. That's a king who's kind and benevolent is only establishing his own rule over his people. Everybody likes a good, kind authority figure. The glory of young men is their strength. The glory of old men is their gray beard. When you're young, we generally have great energy. Be a great athlete, a swimmer, a opera singer, a cattle farmer, full of energy, full of enthusiasm, outrunning everybody when you're young. And us older people look at that and say, wow, I remember when I was like that. There's a certain splendor that comes with getting older. Because you say, wow, how foolish it was when I was 20 and wasting all that energy on nothing. And I wish I had that energy now. Blows that hurt cleanse away evil, as do stripes the inner depths of the heart. Tough circumstances and failures in life and bad things that happen to us generally are used by God to expose our motives, to show us that we're not the good people we thought we were, to get cleanse us from self-deceit, to drive us closer to God. So that's the way God orchestrates circumstances in our life. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, 21:1. Like the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wills. Notice that there's an analogy here. I have a spirit, which is like water. God is the Holy Spirit. He's in control of that stream of living water, and he's able to direct it. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes. The Lord weighs the hearts, the motives. So we always think we're doing the right thing when we're tooling through life, going through life. And we don't understand what our motives are. And we'll find out down the road that we wasted time and energy or made some bad choices or made some foolish choices. We'll also be surprised by the good choices that God is blessing us about. To do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Well, that's powerful. The lifestyle you actually live is what God's looking at, not your outward show of service, not your sacrifices, the things you do without on that land. A haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin. Contrast A and B. Haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin, both. The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. If you work hard and you're consistent, you'll do all right in the long run. Those of everyone who is hasty leads to poverty. If you're hasty and impulsive, you're not likely to end up rich. You're likely to end up losing all you have if you're careless. Getting treasures by a lying tongue is the fleeting fantasy of those who seek death. The violence of the wicked will destroy them because they refuse to do justice. The way of a guilty man is perverse, but as for the pure, his work is right. It's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. That's a very interesting proverb. You better go sleep up on the roof if your wife or your mom is arguing and negative and bitchy and vitriolic. Just get out of the house. And that happens. There are women who drive their husbands to drink or drive them out of the house, and they don't like being nagged and hassled and in frustration. My dad used to do that when I was a little boy. He'd be so frustrated with my mother's bitching and complaining that he'd walk out of the house and go to the men's lodge and spend the evening there and come home late. And my mother never knew why that was happening, I can tell. The soul of the wicked desires evil. His neighbor finds no favor in his eyes. When the scoffer is punished, the simple is made wise. When the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge. The righteous man wisely considers the house of the wicked, overthrowing the wicked for their wickedness. When justice happens in the world, we all breathe a sigh of relief. When a bad guy is caught and taken out and is fair and overdue, we all say, wow, thank God, that was good. Whoever shuts his ears to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be heard. If you ignore people who are real needy and you don't help them, then you're not likely to be helped when you're in the place of need. A gift in secret pacifies anger. A bribe behind the back, strong wrath. It's in life, you can do some small favor for somebody that you care about, and that person who might otherwise be angry with you will drop his anger and be forgiving. If, on the other hand, you bribe somebody and you act behind his back, he's going to find out about it, and he's not going to look favorably on you as a person. See that? Please, you have some interest to think about these proverbs. It is a joy for the just to do justice. Destruction will come to the workers of iniquity. A man who wanders from the way of understanding will rest in the congregation of the dead. You're not going to be in the congregation of the living. You're going to be in the realm of the dead. He who loves pleasure will be a poor man. He loves pleasure as an end in itself. He loves wine, women, and song, and partying, and having a good time. He's going to burn out. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich. The wicked shall be a ransom for the righteous, and the unfaithful for the upright. It's better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Same proverb over a different wording. Better run out of the house and go live in the forest than hang out with that bitchy, nagging, manipulative wife or mother or whoever. Yep. So this is, women can either destroy us or bless us. And the two women in Proverbs, remember. One is the woman wisdom, who's helpful, and the other is the prostitute, who is destructive. He who follows righteousness and mercy finds the righteousness and finds life, righteousness, and honor. A wise man scales the city of the mighty and brings down the trusted stronghold. Picture here of a castle or a walled city that the careful soldier breaks into and finds the vulnerability in that city and pulls it all down from inside, be an inside takeover. Rather than committing a large number of soldiers and assaulting the wall and losing life. Sometimes that actually happens. You put a Trojan horse inside the city and let out people in the horse and they open the gates. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. A proud and haughty man, scoffer is his name, he acts with arrogant pride. The desire of the lazy man kills him. His hands refuse to labor. So there are freeloaders in life who expect to do well and not work and not be responsibility. That's it's interesting. He's slothful. He won't work. He covets greedily all day long. But the righteous gives and does not spare. There are people around this guy who are hardworking and don't complain and responsible in life, pay their bills and go to work and feed themselves. What a contrast we see between these two people. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination. How much more when he brings it with wicked intent? Wow. You can make some kind of sacrifice for all the wrong reasons in the world, and God will not consider that a good sacrifice. Your intentions or your motives are bad. A false witness will perish. A man who hears him will speak endlessly. It's so easy to repeat gossip when you hear it from the false witness. We just love juicy stories about other people, and we love to repeat them. That's the nature of gossip. A wicked man hardens his face, but as for the upright, he establishes his way. There's no wisdom or understanding or counsel against the Lord. You cannot outwit or outfox God. You can't pull the wool over his eyes. You can't deceive him. People do that all the time. People make excuses for their behavior and their actions, thinking that God doesn't care, that he doesn't see, that he doesn't hear, when in fact he does. And you're not going to get away with anything. That's the way the universe is built. A horse is prepared for the day of battle. Deliverance is of the Lord. That's a military situation here where you are the general with a large army and you are thinking about attacking your enemy over here as a large army, and you rush into battle and you're terribly defeated because he's smarter than you are. He maybe has superior force. And your mistake was that you had your horses ready and your soldiers ready, and you weren't counting on the Lord giving you victory in the battle. You weren't counting on God's will being done, because maybe it's his will that you should be killed in battle today and that your enemy should prosper. Just because you needed the chastening and you needed the discipline. So when you're getting in a conflict, this is why it's good to say, Lord, please let my motives be right. Give me the right, help me say the right thing. If I can negotiate a peace with my enemy, do that. See, that's all military. So that's... am I supposed to do another chapter? No. I'm being excused. We did 19, 20, and 21.